Stories of Journey to the West, Chapter 90.
Sun Wukong, Pigsy, and Sandy, they step out of the city and bam, what do they see?
Not just a few enemies, no. It's a whole gathering. This text calls them miscellaneous fur lions, but they're in a very specific formation.
Okay, tell us about that.
You've got the yellow lion leading, then Swanee lion and Tuoxiang lion on the left, Bay's lion and Fuli lion on the right.
Wow, specific.
Very. And in the back, Naoshi lion and Sueshi lion. And right in the middle, the big one, the nine-headed lion.
The main boss, yeah.
Exactly. There are even minor demons mentioned, like a blue-faced monster with a banner, and these two Diaozuan Guai demons with flags in a specific spot, the Can Palace direction.
So that formation, what does it immediately signal? It's not just random, is it?
Definitely not random. It tells you straight away, this isn't just a brawl. It's organized. These aren't mindless beasts. They're tactical.
Right, like they've planned this. The mention of the Can Palace direction, that sounds significant.
It is, yeah. In traditional Chinese cosmology, Can is north, often linked with danger, water, defense. It suggests a deliberate, almost ritualistic positioning. These lions are cunning strategists.
Okay, cunning strategists. But then you have Pigsy.
Ah, Pigsy. Classic Pigsy.
He just walks up and starts insulting them. And what does he say?
He doesn't hold back. Calls them stealing treasure thieves and hairy lumps. Just, you know, blunt as ever.
And how does that go down with the lions? Specifically the yellow lion.
It's like striking a match. The yellow lion just explodes. He's furious, talking about how they destroyed his caves, ruined his mountain field, hurt his family.
So it's personal for them.
Deeply personal. He says their enmity is deep as the sea. That insult just ignites everything. This isn't just a fight. It's revenge for the lion.
Which makes them way more dangerous, I imagine.
Absolutely. And it leads straight into the first clash, doesn't it?
Yeah. How does that first exchange actually play out?
Well, Pigsy goes right for the yellow lion with his wake. But almost immediately, Naoshi lion jumps in with an iron caltrop.
Oh.
And Sueshi lion joins with a three-edged mace, both targeting Pigsy.
So they pile on him quickly.
Very quickly. And Sandy jumps in with his demon-subduing staff. And it just becomes this huge melee. Suani, Bays, Tuoxiang, Fuli, they all pile in.
And Wukong.
Wukong's trying to hold back the tide using his golden hooped rod against this, like, swarm of demons. The text mentions all sorts of weapons.
What kind of weapons?
Rods, hammers, spears, axes, those maces and caltrops we mentioned, clubs, even four-sided rakes. It's chaos.
Sounds intense.
The description says it shook the heavens and turned the earth, which, you know, might be a bit poetic, but it gets the point across. It's ferocious. Seven powerful lions against our three heroes.
Seven against three. And it goes on for a while, right? The text is half a day.
Yeah, half a day of this intense fighting. And you really start to see the toll it takes.
Especially on Pigsy, it seems. What happens to him?
He starts to really tire. The description is quite vivid. His mouth is spitting sticky drool. His legs are getting weak. He just can't keep up.
Oh, wow. That's quite a detail.
It really grounds it, doesn't it?
Yeah.
He eventually gets hit by Sueshi, and Naoshi falls down, cries out, "That's enough." You can almost hear the exhaustion.
And then
he's captured. The two demons just grab him, picked him up by his mane, and dragged him by his tail. Super undignified. They haul him right in front of the nine-headed lion.
Wow. So Pigsy's down. What about Wukong and Sandy? They seem like they're losing too.
They do, yeah. It looks bad for them as well. But this is where Wukong, you know, does his thing. His cleverness kicks in.
His magic hair.
You got it. Pulls out a handful of hair, chews it up, sprays it out, and suddenly there are hundreds of small Wukongs.
The clones.
Clones, yeah. They surround five of the lions, Bays, Swanee, Tuoxiang, Fuli, and it implies the yellow lion, too. This creates an opening.
An opening for him and Sandy to counterattack.
Exactly. It totally changes the dynamic. It's not just about strength. It's about overwhelming them, confusing them. Classic Wukong strategy.
So this counterattack works. What's the result at the end of this first day?
It does work partly. Swanee and Bays get captured by Wukong and Sandy.
Okay, two down for the heroes.
Right. But Fuli and Tuoxiang manage to get away in the confusion, and the yellow lion reports all this back to the nine-headed lion.
So the head honcho now knows he's lost two of his lions, but he has Pigsy. What's his move? Does he just order an all-out attack?
You might expect that, but no. This is where the nine-headed lion shows he's actually pretty calculating.
How so?
He orders Pigsy tied up, but tells them specifically not to harm him. His plan is pragmatic. He wants to trade Pigsy back for his two captured lions.
A prisoner exchange.
Basically, yeah. And he sets a clear condition. If Wukong and Sandy hurt his lions, Pigsy dies. Simple as that.
That's surprisingly strategic,
yeah.
not just mindless rage.
Exactly. It shows he values his own kin, maybe, or at least sees the strategic value in getting them back. It makes him a more interesting villain, I think.
Definitely more complex. So Wukong and Sandy head back to the city with their two captured lions.
They do. And the king in the city, he sees them coming, immediately orders the gates open. They bring the captured demons in and tie them up securely.
And this leads to a conversation about Wukong's magic, right?
Yeah.
The princes are curious.
Yeah. They saw the clones. They ask him, you know, how did you suddenly become hundreds of masters?
And what does Wukong say? Does he keep it secret?
Not really, no. He laughs and explains his body outside body magic. Says he has 84,000 hair follicles.
84,000, wow.
Yeah, and each one can transform, one transforming into 10, 10 transforming into 100, and so on, up to billions of changes. It's this incredible, almost limitless power he has.
Mind-boggling scale. So with the immediate threat dealt with, but knowing the nine-headed lion is still out there, what's the mood in the city?
Tense. Very tense. They know it's not over. The city basically goes into lockdown overnight. Lanterns, flags, guards patrolling, drums, bells, even firecrackers to ward off evil spirits. It's a city bracing for the next attack.
And the nine-headed lion does have a plan for the next day, doesn't he? A pretty clever one.
Oh, yeah, really clever. It shows his strategic thinking again. He tells the yellow lion to lead another big attack on the ground against Wukong and Sandy.
Just a straight-up fight.
Well, that's what it looks like. But it's actually a diversion, a feint.
Ah, okay. So while they're busy fighting down below,
the old monster himself, the nine-headed lion, plans to secretly fly into the city, his target, Tang Monk, the old king, and the princes. He wants to grab them and take them straight to his lair, the nine-curved cave.
A snatch and grab while everyone's distracted.
Yeah.
That's quite a gamble.
A daring double gambit, yeah. He's counting on Wukong and Sandy being totally focused on the ground battle.
And that second ground battle, it kicks off his plan. Wukong and Sandy come out demanding Pigsy back.
They do. They walk out, bold as brass, demanding Pigsy's return, completely unaware of the real plan.
And the fight is even worse this time.
Seems like it. The description mentions howling strong wind, dark fog, flying stones and falling trees. It sounds like chaos, designed purely to keep Wukong and Sandy pinned down and fighting for their lives.
While overhead, the nine-headed lion makes his move.
Exactly. He flies up to the city tower on black clouds, all stealthy, and his capture method is unique and, frankly, terrifying.
How does he do it? Just fight his way through?
Not even. He gets up there, shakes his head, just shakes it, and the sheer terror apparently makes the city officials and guards just tumble off the walls.
Whoa. Just like that.
Just like that. And he goes into the tower, opens his mouth wide, and the text uses this word, caterpillars. It seems to mean he just scoops them up in his mouth.
Squirrel. Mouse.
Squirrel. He's a nine-headed lion, remember? He uses six of his mouths to grab Tang Monk, the old king, the three sons.
Efficient.
Incredibly efficient. And also Pigsy, who was already captured inside.
He grabs Pigsy, too. Wow.
Six mouths, six people. He still has three mouths free as he yells out, "I'll go first," and flies off. It's a stunning display of his unique power.
Okay, so Wukong's down below, fighting this intense diversionary battle, and suddenly he hears commotion from the city.
Yeah, he hears the screams, the chaos, and he gets it instantly. He knows he's been tricked.
What does he do?
He tells Sandy, "Be careful," and then he goes all out. No more holding back.
How so? More clones.
Way more. This time he pulls all the hair from his arm, chews it, spits it out, and becomes thousands of small Wukongs.
Thousands. Not hundreds.
Thousands. It's a massive, overwhelming force. He's clearly furious now. His master's been taken. The gloves are off.
And what does this massive army of Wukongs do to the five lions still fighting on the ground?
The impact is immediate and devastating. No, she gets dragged down. Sueshi is captured alive. Tuoxiang lion, also captured alive. Fuli lion is overthrown, like knocked off his feet.
And the yellow lion, the one who started the fight.
The yellow lion is killed.
Killed outright. Wow.
Yeah, it's a decisive, brutal end for him. Wukong isn't messing around anymore.
So four captured alive, one killed. What about the minor demons?
They scatter. The blue-faced monster, the Diaozuan, Guai Diaozuan, they manage to escape in the chaos.
Okay, so the ground battle is decisively won by Wukong. What happens back in the city?
The city officials, probably terrified but relieved, open the gates again. They bring in the five captured lions plus the body of the yellow lion. It's quite a scene.
And the queen must be frantic.
Absolutely distraught. She pleads with Wukong, terrified for her husband, her sons, and Tang Monk.
Understandable. What does Wukong say? Can he reassure her?
He stays remarkably calm, actually. tells her the old demon used a capture spell, implies they're probably okay, just snatched away. He promises that he and Sandy will go get them back tomorrow.
Okay, a promise. But what about right now? What does he order?
This is interesting. He gives very practical, almost cold orders. First, peel the hide off the dead yellow lion.
Peel his hide?
Immediately. Then, tie up the 6 living lions securely. And finally, get some food ready so he and Sandy can rest up before the rescue mission. He tells everyone they'll be safe. Next morning,
Sun Wukong and Sha Seng, they just arrived at this place called Bamboo Knot Mountain.
And the way it's described in the text, it's just incredible. Really poetic. You get these Chinese phrases like peaks, yellow, ridges, which sounds impressive, even if you don't know the exact meaning. Steep peaks, rugged ridges, pretty much. It paints a picture of a place that's stunningly beautiful, but also difficult, challenging. You know, deep torrents with murmuring water, steep cliffs with embroidered flowers.
Wow.
Returning peaks layered, ancient paths winding. It's vividly drawn.
So paradise, cranes, clouds, apes, deer, even phoenixes and orioles, flowers blooming everywhere. It sounds lovely.
It does. But that contrast is key, isn't it? This incredible beauty, this sense of peace almost right before the danger hits.
It sets you up, makes the threat feel bigger when it arrives. That idyllic feel makes the danger more jarring.
Exactly. It's a classic technique. You feel the wonder, but there's that little hint of something powerful, maybe perilous, lurking just beneath the surface.
And it doesn't take long for that something to show up.
Yeah.
Wukong and Sha Seng spot this little guy, Wu-faced imp, King Leonard.
Right. Just got a short stick, darts out from a cliff, and Wukong, well, he does what Wukong does.
Gives chase. The imp panics and runs.
And leads them right where it wants them, maybe, to these 2 flower-patterned stone doors tightly closed.
Ooh, mysterious.
And above the doors, there's the stone slab. And the name inscribed on it is, well, it's quite something. Myriad Spirits, Bamboo Knot Mountainy, 9 Curved Swirling Cave.
Myriad Spirits. 9 Curved Swirling Cave. That sounds like a serious place.
It really does. It screams, powerful demon lives here. Suggests someone ancient, maybe deeply tied to the mountain itself.
And they're about to find out who. The imp slips inside, slams the door, tells his boss what's happened.
And boom, we meet the old demon. Turns out he's the yellow lion demon.
Is killed.
And his first reaction isn't anger, exactly. It's grief.
Grief.
Yeah, this really heart-wrenching cry. Oh, the bitterness. My Huangxi son is dead. Now Shi, Shu Shi, Tuan Shang, Fu Li are all captured by the monks. So his whole crew, basically.
So this isn't just some random obstacle. This guy has a reason to hate them, a very personal reason.
Totally. He's got a serious score to settle. That makes him much more motivated, much more dangerous.
And the irony is, he's already captured some of the group. Baji, Tang Seng, the king's father and son. They're tied up inside, nearby.
And Baji, he hears the old demon listing the captured demons Wukong defeated, and what does he think?
He thinks Wukong must have won the fight outside and is here to rescue them. He's secretly happy, even tied up.
Classic Baji, right? Always hoping for the easy way out, usually relying on Wukong.
Yeah.
That optimism, or maybe just wishful thinking, even when things look bad.
So the old demon knows Wukong is outside. And he doesn't just send minions.
No, this is where it gets really interesting. He walks out himself, no armor, no weapon, just walks out to face Wukong directly. That takes some guts.
Or incredible power. Wukong attacks with his staff. Sha Seng joins in.
And the old demon, he just shakes his head and suddenly he has 8 heads. They all open their mouths at once.
8 heads.
8 heads. And they just sort of lift Wukong and Sha Seng into the cave effortlessly, like sucking them in.
Whoa, not even a fight, just captured.
Exactly. It's not brute force in the usual sense. It's almost supernatural. It shows this demon is on a completely different level. Maybe something Wukong can't just punch his way through.
That's a scary thought, even for Wukong.
It really highlights his vulnerability sometimes, despite all his power.
Okay, so now Wukong and Sha Seng are prisoners too. Tied up by the remaining little demons, Diaozuan Guguai, Guguai Diaozuan, and that blue-faced imp, King Leonard.
And the old demon, remember, he's grieving and angry about Huangxi's son. So yeah. He decides Wukong needs to pay. He orders the little demons to beat Wukong with thorn branches and willow sticks. Specific, huh? To avenge Huangxi's son.
Ouch. thorn branches and willow sticks. But wait, this is Wukong we're talking about.
Right. And his reaction, or lack of reaction, that's kind of hilarious.
Tell me.
The text literally says the sticks just brushed his itch. He doesn't make a sound. Doesn't care in the slightest.
Brushed his itch. That's amazing.
And the sound of the beating is described like someone hitting a wooden clapper.
Well, Wukong's just chilling. But what about the others? Baji, Tong Sang, the prince.
Oh, they're terrified. Horrified watching this. But Wukong, completely unbothered. It just drives home how insanely tough he is.
His invulnerability.
Yeah.
Forged in the crucible, right?
Exactly. Physical pain from something like this, it means nothing to him. It sets him apart, reminds everyone, maybe even the demon, that he's not just some ordinary fighter.
And then the dialogue gets funny too, right?
Yeah, Sha Sang, bless him, sees Wukong getting beaten and offers to take 100 blows for him.
Loyal Sha Sang.
But the old demon's like, hold on, your turn's tomorrow.
And Baji.
Baji immediately worries, what about the day after tomorrow? Always thinking about his own skin.
It's such a great moment. Danger, yes, but also these little character quirks shining through.
Absolutely. So the beating goes on until it gets dark. The old demon finally decides that's enough for one day and goes off to his fancy brocade cloud nest to sleep.
Leaving the three little demons on guard duty. Big mistake.
Huge mistake. Because now it's Wukong's turn. He does his classic escape trick.
Shrinks down, slips the rope.
Gets his staff out from behind his ear. Standard procedure. And then, well, payback time for the guards.
What does he do?
Turns them into three meat pancakes.
Oof. Brutal, but efficient.
Very. It shows how quickly the tables can turn. He goes from being easily captured to escaping and taking out the guards just like that. Master of surprise.
So Wukong's free. He unties Sha Sang next.
But then comes the crucial error.
Oh. I have a feeling I know who causes it.
Who else? Baji. He's still tied up, sees Wukong freeing Sha Sang, and he gets impatient. And loud.
What does he say?
He yells out, brother, my hands and feet are all swollen. Why didn't you untie me first?
Oh, Baji, read the room.
Exactly. His big shout wakes up the old demon instantly.
Oh, no. So Wukong has a choice to make fast.
Split-second decision. He can't fight the old demon again right now, especially not in the cave with everyone else still tied up. So he blows out the lamp, plunging the place into darkness.
Creates chaos.
Smashes through the doors and basically bolts, just runs for it.
Leaving everyone else behind. Sha Sang, Tang Sang, Baji, the royals.
Left behind. Stuck. Wukong had to make a tactical retreat. It's kind of shocking, actually.
It really is. It shows that things can go wrong, plans fall apart because of, well, a moment of impatience, human error almost.
Or pig error in this case. It highlights the chaos, the fragility of their alliances sometimes. Victory isn't guaranteed, and sometimes you have to cut your losses, even temporarily.
So what happens inside the cave after Wukong flees?
Well, the old demon comes out, sees the dead guards, the meat pancakes, realizes Wukong is gone.
He must be furious.
Oh, yeah. And then he spots Sha Sang, who apparently didn't quite make it out in the confusion. He's described as being sort of stuck to the corridor wall.
Stuck to the wall? How?
The text isn't super clear, maybe in the chaos of smashing doors. Anyway, the demon grabs him easily.
Poor Sha Sang. Freed for like 2 minutes.
Right. The demon ties him up again, nice and tight this time. And then he goes and repairs the doors Wukong smashed. Reinforces his fortress.
So after that narrow escape, Wukong doesn't hang around. He hops on a somersault cloud, zooms straight back to Tihua's palace, and there he's met by, like, a whole welcome committee of local deities, the city gods there. Everyone's bowing.
Which must be a nice change after getting beaten up.
Yeah, definitely a nice change of pace.
But it's interesting, right? Even Wukong, with all his power, he still taps into this this network of local spirits.
He does.
Is it something about the hierarchy, maybe? Anyway, this is where the breakthrough happens. The golden-headed Gadi and the six Jia, six Ding divine generals arrive.
The big guns.
Yeah, and they've brought someone with them, a ground devil, basically a local land god.
And this land god probably shaking in his boots.
You'd imagine so.
He spills the beans. He says, okay, this old demon, the main one, he showed up on Bamboo Knot Mountain about 2 years ago.
2 years in Earth time. That's important later.
Right. And he says the nine winding cave where they're all trapped, that used to be a den for six other lions.
Okay.
And get this, those six lions now worship the old demon as their ancestor.
So he took over their turf and became their leader.
Seems like it. And the ancestor's name, Nine Spirit Yuan Sheng, a nine-headed lion.
A nine-headed lion. That's specific and powerful. So who could possibly control a creature like that?
Well, the land god has the answer. He says, straight up, To beat this thing, you have to go to the Eastern Pole Wondrous Rock Palace.
The very top, basically.
Yes, yeah. And invite its master. No one else, he says, can capture it.
Wow, so not just a master, but the master, and the location is key.
And this is where it gets really interesting. Wukong hears Eastern Pole Wondrous Rock Palace, and it clicks. He's like, wait a minute.
He knows that place.
He knows that place. That's the home of Taijuku Tianzen and Taijuku Tianzen's mount.
Is a nine-headed lion.
Bingo. So the big bad demon, the ancient terror, it might just be someone's runaway pet.
It's kind of wild when you think about it like that, all this chaos from a pet escaping. It certainly changes how you see the problem.
Totally. So Wukong, now he has a plan, right?
Mm-hmm.
He tells the local gods, okay, you guys go back, guard my master and brother.
Right, keep them safe.
I'm off to the Eastern Pole Wondrous Rock Palace. And whoosh, he's gone.
Monkey on a mission.
He really is. And he travels fast. The text says he arrives at the Eastern Heaven Gate around Wuj. So super early morning, like 3 to 5 a.m.
And who does he bump into right away? The broad-eyed Heavenly King.
Yeah, him and his whole retinue.
And the Heavenly King doesn't exactly hold back, does he? He kind of ribs Wukong a bit.
He does. It's funny.
It shows a kind of, I don't know, familiarity. Like, they know Wukong's reputation for trouble. He basically says, well, this mess, pointing vaguely west, this is because you wanted to be a teacher. You attracted this den of lions yourself.
Huh. And you can almost picture Wukong sort of shrugging like, yeah, okay, fair point.
Acknowledging the hit.
Yep. So after that little exchange, he heads towards the Wondrous Rock Palace itself. And the description, wow, it's meant to sound incredible.
Oh, it does. Layers of colored clouds, purple aura, golden light, jade gates.
Flowers everywhere, sunlight, 10,000 true immortals, 1,000 saints. It's clearly a place of immense spiritual significance.
It's pure celestial order, right?
What?
Such a contrast to the messy cave Wukong just escaped. It makes you wonder about the lion originating from here.
Definitely. So Wukong gets inside, a celestial child greets him, and then the big boss himself, Taijuku Tianzen, comes down from his nine-colored lotus seat.
Surrounded by billions of auspicious lights.
Very grand entrance.
Very grand. But Wukong, you know, he gets straight to the point, no messing about.
Typical Wukong.
He explains the whole situation. The princes wanting to be disciples, the weapons getting stolen, his master Baji, the king's sons, all captured by this gold-furred lion demon.
Which, of course, they now suspect is the nine-spirit Yuan Sheng.
Exactly.
And it connects the dots, doesn't it? How a simple act on Earth, like teaching martial arts, can cause ripples all the way up here in the heavens. It's like he's reporting a celestial incident.
Yeah, like a breach of protocol that caused trouble down below. So Tianzen hears this whole story.
And what's his first move?
He calls for his lion slave, the guy responsible for the lion.
The caretaker, or maybe the negligent caretaker.
Well, yeah, because this lion slave, they have to wake him up. He's fast asleep.
Oh, dear.
And when he finally wakes up, he confesses. He says he was in the Great Thousand Dew Palace, had a bottle of wine.
Okay, a bit unprofessional.
A bit. And he admits he got drunk in his sleep and, whoops, didn't secure the lion properly.
He just admits it. Wow. But what about the wine?
Ah, see, Tianzen explains that. It wasn't just any old wine. It was reincarnation jade liquid. Lunhui Qinyang.
Ooh, fancy name. Sounds potent.
Potent is right. It was a gift from Taishong Laojun, and it was meant to keep the drinker out cold, basically drunk, for three whole days.
Three heavenly days, presumably.
Exactly. And this is the big aha moment, right? Wukong points out, hang on, the land god said the demon showed up on Earth 2 or 3 years ago.
Not 3 days.
Right. And Taijuku Tianzen just confirms it. Yep, that's right. Run day in the heavenly palace is 1 year down in the mortal world.
And there it is, the celestial time explanation. It's crucial, isn't it? That 3-day nap for the lion slave
translates into years of trouble on Earth.
So the lion's escape wasn't like a planned evil thing from Tianzen's side. It was just an accident, a lapse in supervision magnified by this cosmic time difference.
A cosmic HR failure, basically. And what's interesting, too, is how Tianzen talks about his lion, his Yuan Shenger.
Right. He seems quite fond of it, despite the trouble.
Yeah, he calls it a true spirit who has cultivated for a long time, high praise. And he notes it, its roar is incredibly powerful, reaching 3 saints above and 9 springs below.
Immense power.
But also, he says it generally does not harm living beings easily. Which kind of paints a different picture, doesn't it? More like a powerful creature that got loose, not necessarily a monster bent on destruction.
It really does, and adds this layer of nuance. It's powerful, yes, but maybe not malicious by nature, just disobedient this time.
Exactly. So, armed with the truth, Taiju Qutianzin, Wukong, and the very embarrassed lion slave.
I bet he was embarrassed.
They head straight down to Bamboo Knot Mountain.
Back to the scene of the crime, so to speak.
And when they get there, the guardian deities who Wukong left behind, they confirm something interesting. They say the demon got angry earlier, but then just went to sleep.
Ah, so no torture, no further mayhem.
Right. It didn't inflict any torture, which lines up perfectly with what Tianzin said about its general nature.
It wasn't on a destructive rampage. It was just napping angrily.
Apparently. So Tianzin turns to Wukong and says, okay, you go provoke it. Get it riled up so I can handle it.
He wants to draw it out.
Yeah. And Wukong, you know, he's always up for shouting some insults.
He's good at that.
He goes into the cave yelling, you fiend! Give me back my master! Give me back my brothers!
Standard Wukong provocation. Expecting a big fight, probably.
Absolutely. And the old demon, Nine Spirit Yuan Sheng, wakes up properly now, furious. It charges out towards Wukong.
Here we go.
Exactly. Because just as the lion reaches the edge of the cliff, ready to attack Wukong, Tianzin just calls out a simple incantation, almost casual. Yuan Chenger, I have come.
Just like calling a pet.
Just like that. Oh. And the effect is instantaneous. The lion stops dead, recognizes its master's voice.
And what does it do?
It immediately just drops down, prostrates itself on all fours, and starts kowtowing. Completely subdued, no resistance at all.
Wow. All that power, all that rage, gone. Just like that. The authority is absolute.
Totally absolute. And then, to add insult to injury, the lion slave runs over.
The one who caused all this by falling asleep.
That's the one. He runs over and just starts beating the lion, thumping it, scolding it. You ran away. You caused me so much trouble.
And the lion
just takes it. Doesn't move, doesn't make a sound, just lies there getting yelled at and hit.
Taking its lumps, quite literally. That's surprisingly domestic, almost.
It really is. Eventually, the lion slave gets tired, stops the beating, puts a fancy brocade saddle on the lion.
Gets it ready for riding.
Yep. Tianzin mounts it, gives the command to go, and poof. The lion drives a cloud and heads straight back to the wondrous rock palace with its master.
Problem solved, just like that. No epic celestial battle. It's almost anticlimactic.
Completely. After all that buildup, the terrifying demon is just leashed and taken home. Right after the nine-headed lion, this really formidable demon has been dealt with, thanks to the heavenly venerable stepping in, actually. What's striking, I think, is how fast things move. From this huge cosmic battle, straight into some very practical, down-to-earth tasks. Monkey King, you know, he's all business. Quickly frees the king, Tang Sandang, Pigsy Sandy, the princes, everyone who is captured.
And then Pigsy steps up. Pigsy, usually known for his appetite and maybe not being the most subtle, he does something pretty decisive. Grabs a load of firewood, the text says, much withered firewood, and just torches the demon's cave. Burns the nine-curve winding cave down completely, like to a scorched broken kiln.
Mm.
That's more than just tidying up, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. It's total eradication. It really makes you think, what is this level of destruction, even from Pigsy, tell us about how they deal with evil? It's not just about defeating the enemy. It's about making sure there's literally nothing left.
Yeah.
No trace that could cause trouble later. It's very thorough.
Right, like wiping the slate clean. So first step, complete removal of the problem. But their impact goes way beyond just destruction, doesn't it? They start rebuilding in a way. After the cave burning spectacle, they make sure the local land god is there keeping watch. Then Pigsy and Sandy use their powers pretty handy to carry the king and princes back home. Monkey King escorts Tang Sun Zhang. They get back to the city, huge welcome, big feast, and they get put up for the night in the Bo Sha Ting.
But yeah, the welcome is huge. And the next day, this is where it gets really interesting, I think. After the official thank you banquet, Monkey King gives this pretty surprising order. Kill the six lying monsters, the meat prepared for eating. The way the meat is distributed is incredibly symbolic. It's not just a feast for the heroes. Sure, some goes to the king's palace, some for the officials. But most of it, five huge portions, get chopped into tiny pieces, like one or two lying each, so very small, and then given out to everyone, the army, the regular folks all over the city. The text is very specific.
Mm-hmm.
It's to taste the flavor and, crucially, to calm their fears.
Ah, okay. So it's not just dinner. It's like a public ritual.
Precisely. It's a collective act. Everyone gets to literally consume the source of their terror. It's about turning that fear into something conquered, something digested, maybe. It symbolically cements the victory and helps the whole community move past the trauma. It's quite visceral, but maybe effective in that context.
That's a really powerful way to think about it, turning fear into, well, food.
Well, soon after this, the blacksmiths show up. and they're proud as punch. They finish making new weapons for the Three Princes, replicas of a pilgrim zone.
Right, but these aren't just ordinary weapons. We're talking about a golden hooped rod replica weighing 1,000 jin. That's what, like 500 kilograms, half a ton? And the rake and the staff replicas, 800 jin each, around 400 kilos. I mean, that's insane. How could normal human princes possibly even lift these things, let alone fight with them?
Exactly the question. And the text gives us this amazing aha moment. It wasn't just because the princes were determined or had strong wills. The poem and the prose both emphasize it. Sun Wukong, the divine master, had first bestowed divine strength on them. That phrase, Xian Shu Le Shen Li, it's quite specific.
Xian Shu Le Shen Li. So he gave them divine power.
Yes. It signals a direct, deliberate, and seemingly lasting transfer of supernatural ability. It wasn't just, oh, I'll help you win this fight. It was an upgrade. A permanent one, it seems.
Wow. So Monkey King isn't just protecting them. He's actually empowering them, giving mortals divine strength. What are the implications of that? That feels huge.
It is huge. It shows they aren't just passing through, fixing problems, and leaving. They're fundamentally changing the kingdom's capabilities. They're equipping the next generation. It's about building resilience, making the kingdom self-sufficient in its defense. They're giving them the power, literally, to protect themselves long after the pilgrims are gone.
And it's not just physical power, right? There's more.
Absolutely. Teng Senzang, the master, urges his disciples, Monkey Pigsy and Sandy, to teach the princes their fighting techniques right away. So you have these three divine beings holding martial arts classes in the royal courtyard. And the text says, in just a few days, the princes become practiced and proficient. They master 72 different combat methods. Offense, defense, the whole package.
72 techniques in a few days.
Yeah.
Okay. That divine strength must help with the learning curve, too.
You'd think so. But what's really fascinating is seeing the pilgrims shift into this role of educators. Mentors, almost. They don't just kill the monster. They teach the locals how to handle future monsters themselves. It really drives home that idea that knowledge, applied knowledge, is maybe the most valuable gift. They're ensuring lasting change.
It's like that old saying, right? Give a man a fish or teach him how to fish. They're definitely teaching them how to fish here with superpowered fishing rods. So after all this at the feast, the divine strength, the martial arts training, the king wants to thank them properly, tries to give them a big plate piled with gold and silver.
Standard procedure, you'd think. But Monkey King, he just laughs. He's beyond material wealth, right? Totally detached. Classic Monkey King. But then Pigsy, ever the pragmatist.
Yeah, Pigsy's never quite as detached, is he? What does he want?
He pipes up that his clothes got torn up fighting those lion demons. And he'd quite like a new set, thank you very much.
Oh, Pigsy. Even after everything, it comes down to a ripped robe. That's actually kind of relatable.
It really is. It's this wonderful touch that brings these larger-than-life figures right back down to earth. Monkey refuses riches, but Pigsy's simple practical need instantly met. The princes are happy to oblige. They bring out new robes, green brocade, red brocade, tea brown brocade for all three warrior pilgrims. It just highlights their basic needs alongside their incredible power and the genuine affection that people feel for them. It's that mix again, the divine and the everyday.
It's a great moment. And then finally, they're ready to leave, to head west again. What's the departure like?
It's incredible. The entire city turns out. The people are hailing them as arhats descended to the mortal world, basically enlightened beings and living Buddhas. There's music, banners, flags, incense burning, lanterns. It's a massive reverent send-off. They leave, as the text says, free from worries, focused on achieving enlightenment, heading to the Buddha realm and Lane Temple. Mission accomplished in this kingdom.